On today's College Football Inquirer, is there another Indiana out there, as in a team that previously was not the type of team that could compete for national titles that suddenly will become a team that can compete for national titles? Is that team currently toiling away at spring practice right now? Plus, should the football selection committee be as transparent as the basketball selection committee, which tends to explain things a lot better, we noticed the other day? Also, we dive back into a Ross story from last week about the SEC potentially going its own way in terms of rules and enforcement, or is that just saber-rattling trying to get some wheels moving at the NCAA level? We'll talk about all of that on today's College Football Inquirer. This is College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples. And gentlemen, I am on spring break. That is why that is not a green screen.
I can see that.
Is yeah. Florida Bay.
The actual bay. Look at there. I didn't see any spring breakers running onto the pier and into the water with a bottle of bourbon in their hand. But soon, probably. Well, it's too early.
One of them would be one of my kids who are not allowed to drink bourbon, especially not on a podcast, especially not on YouTube. Yeah. And then the other one would be my wife who, I mean, she might have already had
the kids. The kids are allowed, just not on the podcast.
Outside of the podcast, they're allowed.
Stick to beer and wine, guys. Like, we're not ready for the hard stuff yet. So,
yeah. All right.
It's a light reception.
It's just trying to break them in gently. But
it's a hell of a backdrop. Better than ours.
Yeah. Well, everybody else is getting hit by horrific weather, and I hope everybody's doing okay. Hopefully, we can give you something to do if you're bored or your power's out. You can listen to the show. You can watch the show at yahoosports.tv on any device. Gentlemen, we have a question. And this is a question that's sort of been hanging over the sport of college football for the last year or so. And I think it probably started a couple years ago when Indiana made the playoff in year one under Kurt Cignetti, but then they go win the national title. And so people keep asking me this. This is one I get a lot in the mailbags and, you know, the email. Is there another Indiana out there? Is there another program that, if paired with the right coach, could suddenly become a team that competes for national titles? And I wanted to pose that question to you guys. Is there somebody out there for either of you?
Is there someone out there for me?
Well, you're married to her.
It's hard to tell. Allegedly. She hasn't left yet. All right. This is a tricky question. Because I've heard you, I don't know if you meant to do this, Andy, but I think you've asked it a couple different ways. Are we looking for a previously non-elite program that that has the financial potential that Indiana now has? Are we looking for that? Are we looking for a program that has yet to find the right coach? Like, give me some parameters here, because I have a couple
LSU
different answers.
Qualifies here, because LSU's won three national titles century. So, you know, them hiring Lane Kiffin, if they win a national title, that's just them getting back.
Well, you can probably eliminate 12 to 15 sort of blue blood football powerhouse types.
Yes, right. If Whittingham makes Michigan a national title contender, well, they just won it. So that doesn't count.
I feel like it has to be a bottom non-title team, a team that has not won a national championship in football. I mean, we won't even have to get as extreme as Indiana. Let's just say 30 or 40 years, okay? 40 or 50 years even.
But
they have to be the Big Two.
I wouldn't count Oregon either. I wouldn't count Oregon either because they've been right there, even though they've never won a national title.
All right, we're gonna continue to shave this down until we get to this. So they also have had to have sucked. I still think they have to be in the Big Two because I think that was a big part.
I disagree.
Big component.
I think there's one that's not.
All right. I think I know which one. But I'm a firm skeptic that what do we call middle two conferences could generate an Indiana type story when they're so desperate to try and keep their top teams like TCU and Florida State and Clemson relevant. I think it would be really hard for them to do this with Kansas or something like that. So, is SMU that you were thinking about?
No, it's Texas Tech, but SMU is a good one too. Because Texas Tech, if we look historically, has not been that great. You know, the best season they ever had was 2008 under Mike Leach until last year. And they've not really won at a high percentage. I mean, Joey McGuire's 2024 was, I think the best season they'd had since the Leach era. So it's not like they were winning at this major clip and before Cody Campbell started pumping all this money into the roster. So I actually, Texas Tech is one of my candidates for this thing. And you can say, oh, well, they're just buying it. I don't care how they're doing it. They're going from an also-ran to a team that I think may be able to compete for national championships in the future.
I'm going through various top 20, like way too early, top 25 that everyone puts out. There's not a lot of eligible candidates.
I'll give you another
to
one.
To me, there's an obvious one in the SEC that's comparable to Indiana. I think it's in Lexington, Kentucky.
Yes, sir. I mean,
seems like the obvious sort of comparison, right? Like middle, lower tier, or really lower tier, I guess, in football in one of the big two, with enough money, you would think, and resources to be able to afford to get up there in football and make strides, where we've seen a little bit from them right under Mark Stoops, but not them getting, they would have to go from that 8-win sort of realm that we saw Mark Stoops to that 12 win. But yeah, you know, basketball school, it just seems like that's the comparable one.
Working on a couple, you know. Hang on. All right.
And they just hired a new coach in Will Stein, who comes from Oregon. He was the OC there. And what I thought was interesting is, even though they spent a fortune buying out Mark Stoops, which thankfully Mark Stoops let him put it on layaway instead of asking for it all up front, like he could have.
He could have gone straight to the track.
If you look at their portal action this year, obviously they go get Kenny Menchie at quarterback, but the more important thing is going and getting multiple power conference starting offensive linemen who are not cheap in the transfer portal. Yeah. They had resources to spend. Kentucky gave Will Stein what he needed right off the bat. And I think that tells me they are very, very excited, could potentially be very good.
All right. Here's what I got. Ross, do you have any more?
Well, there's also another one in the SEC that almost did it. They were two wins away from doing it this past year in Ole Miss, right?
That's one on my list.
It's funny because
in the short term,
you're right. You're right because I'm dismissing Ole Miss because they were good the year before, and they were good last year,
right? But really, historically, I mean, they hadn't won a championship since in 50 years or something, right?
Usually, when it was just white people, usually. They were really good back then. Here's my list. I did include Ole Miss because they haven't won a national title since the 60s, and some of those are like kind of fugazi. I'm going to play around here based off of... So I'm also going to keep myself under like a pretty short-term expectation. So like I'm not really going to try and project huge here. I have one stretch. You'll see if you'll entertain it. I mentioned SMU, Andy. I think they could do it. All right?
I think that's a good one.
All right. I did include Ole Miss because they seem the closest to the Indiana like path. Like it kind of feels like if Golding.
They're the closest to doing it.
Yeah. Okay. So that one's explanatory. This is where I start to get a little like iffy. Are you ready? What about like 2 years from now? What about Virginia Tech? And do they count because they played in a national title game in 1999?
They count. That's 27 years ago. They definitely count. God, a lot of water's gone under the bridge since then.
Turn into dust. All right. Okay. So Virginia Tech counts. All right. Would really need to make a significant difference this year and then somehow continue to double, if not triple down on the NIL that has been promised coming their way. So again, a little bit of a reach. All right, Andy, how about, does BYU count?
Yes, because I don't think been, you know, 2020, they were nationally relevant, but 2020, I think we've discovered nothing that happened there made any sense. So then you've got to go back much further into the 80s. Now, they've been good. They've had good program, good program. They've had good years, but they've not been nationally relevant. But let's say, and BYU obviously makes the Big 12 championship game this year, brings back a lot of the team. Bear Bachmeyer was a true freshman starting quarterback for them. They keep Kalani Sitake. Thank you, Crumble Cookies. And
Yep.
NIL connection. I can see it.
Last one. You ready?
It's a good one.
This has to do with more off-field news. You ready? The owner of the Houston Rockets, Tillman Fertitta, currently the United States ambassador to Italy, don't ask, is in the process of acquiring Caesars. casino. All right.
He already has several casinos, right?
He does. Yeah. This would basically create sort of like a mega merger in the casino industry. He is the leading, I guess, like considered the leading bidder. All right. He owns the Houston Rockets. He has dialed it back somewhat in his involvement with Houston since he bought the Rockets. I don't think he wants to stay out of football. All right. I think he also has I think he has 2 degrees. I think he has a master's from Texas Tech, so he could sort of be considered a Texas Tech guy, although he's not. He's very much like U of H. His name is on the basketball arena. If Houston were to tie it into what's going on currently, let's say they broke through and won a national title in basketball this year, right? They were, what, 2 points away last year? Three points or something?
They were right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was one bad offensive possession away.
Yeah, they lost, by the way, if you're like me, they lost to Florida in the national championship game of the basketball. Sorry. So what if Fertitta comes back in a big way and says, hey, I've got the apparatus here that can, you know, it's not oil. It ain't black gold. But I have a substantial stake in the entertainment industry and ways to create NIL opportunities to elevate Houston football and push Texas Tech specifically for that Big 12 crown.
I can definitely wild card. See that. I like that a lot. And now, right. Isn't Tillman's son an LSU guy?
I think one of them are.
The one that's, one of them's kind of runs the business with him, but I'm not sure he's LSU guy. I don't remember.
There's one that's very much
referring
U of H.
To? I can't remember.
There's one that's very much U of H. So,
but Tillman is very much U of H. And I mean, he's dialed it back some, but I watched a game this year where they showed him very prominently courtside at the Fertitta Center. So he's still very interested. I believe he's still the chair of Houston's board.
He is. The one wild card here is I still believe that I wrote two pretty substantial profiles on him 10 years ago when Houston was trying to get into the Big 12 and he was causing a lot of public furor in Texas. I still think he's going to try and make a play for the NFL. I think that he would try and buy the Saints specifically from the Benson family. So maybe he would get distracted again. But that's a guy with Cody Campbell potential to come in and disrupt the order of things in college football.
Yes. He is a billionaire with a B. Very much could. I like all these. I want to go back to Ole Miss a little bit because you guys are right. I probably dismissed Ole Miss because they've been so successful recently. But the Indiana story is so strange. Like, it's not supposed to happen in 2 years. But let's say Ole Miss were to break through this year and win a national title or win a national title in the next 3 years, being as good as they've been the last few years and just kind of gradually working their way up. That would be that story. They were an SEC also ran, and now they are a national title contending program that we assume under Pete Golding will continue to be one.
This is why I love this offseason so much when it comes to LSU and Ole Miss specifically. All right. Mm-hmm. Just by mentioning this, just by Ross throwing out Ole Miss and Andy, you agreed and I agreed, LSU fans are going to be upset. They're going to have their back up. And here's why. We didn't say anything about LSU winning, losing. Mm-hmm. We didn't say anything about it. It's the value proposition that LSU kind of holds in their mind's eye of, oh, the only reason that you were good is the individual that we took. Now, that's one argument, and that could bear fruit this fall. The counter argument, which could also bear fruit, is that Ole Miss's willingness to organize and be so effective and really ahead of the curve in compensating players, because they always have been, if they were able to
none of their conference rivals were.
Of course not, Andy. Everyone goes to Alabama for academics and the love of the Tide. If Ole Miss's NIL continues to function that way, if the talent acquisition and the personnel evaluation continues to function that way, if the offensive drop-off schematically is not as significant as people are predicting, then why not at least return back to the playoff, at least become a perennial playoff team?
Well, it's also not an either-or. It's not that Ole Miss is good, it means LSU is going to be bad. It's more than likely they're both going to be good.
Correct. But that's not how either party is thinking. They're thinking in absolutes, that it's a zero-sum game. And you get this occasionally in the SEC, like specifically with these divorces and these coaches. And I love it so much because there's no rational thought being applied whatsoever. And it just, it also takes that rivalry, which I have such a personal history in, and just ratchets it up to 11. And I love that so much.
Can I throw one more out there and feel free to dismiss this one?
Okay.
Has Auburn won too much in the last 20 years?
Auburn has a national title. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
I
like what they're doing.
In one, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And they went undefeated too in another season. Yeah, so I don't know if they make the list. So what is our list? So BYU, Ole Miss, Kentucky, Texas Tech.
Houston, SMU.
We talk about SMU.
That's a good one. That's a good
Everything
one.
Everything I just that, said, yeah. every joke that I've made about the sort of willingness for Ole Miss to compensate off the field or under the table, 100x that, guys. Like, people are arguing over where they're going to park their Gulfstream to tailgate at an SMU game.
Yeah.
They are very, very committed to returning to prominence in football now that all that stuff, that fantastic book, A Payroll to Meet, which is probably somewhere over my bookshelf, it's all legal now. So I like SMU as a long-term investment as long as the ACC is somewhat stable for like 5 years.
We have only one from the ACC, huh? SMU, it's a new one.
Gardner mentioned Virginia Tech.
Oh, Virginia Tech. Yeah.
Yep. And obviously, I don't think Clemson or Florida State count.
Miami
probably
doesn't really
count
either.
Probably won too much.
Yeah.
Andy, I'll give you a long-term play just to make people mad. I don't want to be shocked to hear this. I don't think it's going to work out in Chapel Hill with Bill Belichick.
What
if the new offensive coordinator at Ohio State is successful? The Buckeyes are back in a national title game. Maybe they win a national championship. And maybe that beloved 12 personnel of one Arthur Smith and his deep and abiding passion for giving 12 targets to tight end three.
I can't believe
the Falcons
fan is even letting these words pass his lips.
Hey, shout out to Jonnu Smith. What if Arthur Smith is formidable enough as Ohio State's OC, goes back to his alma mater, Andy.
Yep.
And you know what North Carolina doesn't lack for? Money. You know what that last name Smith doesn't lack for? Money.
FedEx patch on the jersey? Let's go.
Would I be buying into the same thing I make fun of, which is constantly looking at North Carolina football on paper and thinking that they should be relevant when they never have been? Yes, I am.
Yeah.
You got to use the phrase. Say the catchphrase.
Yeah.
Wait, what is it? They're the best
sleeping
the best
giant.
They're sleeping giant. Yes. I always say giant. They're the best. Yes. I mean, they could on paper. That was always my joke at SB Nation. On paper, North Carolina football. I mean, yeah, sleeping giant, Andy.
And what if they find their way into one of the Big Two and then they get Big Two money for a couple years? You know,
they
have got that going for them.
Ross, real fast, do you still think that, like, it's been a minute since we've touched this hot button third rail? Do you think North Carolina is still the number one free agent in a non-Notre Dame sense for the Big Two to poach?
Yeah, if you're excluding Notre Dame, yeah. I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
For either league, probably.
It's the one the Big Ten and the SEC always coveted. The Big Ten, it was the alma mater of the commissioner for years and years. Now, Jim Lohan is no longer the commissioner, but it has everything the Big Ten wants and a lot of what the SEC wants. So, yeah, I think it
academic is prestige and rednecks who'll fight you in a parking lot.
It's true. Let's go to NC State. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, dude, UNC. Okay. I have friends in the old North State. Shout out to BJ from American Aquarium. Okay. Wolfpack fan. UNC has a healthy sidewalk culture filled with people who will buy apparel without ever having stepped on campus. And that, my friend, that spells SEC.
that would be very funny. Now, I think it's interesting. We don't have another Big Ten team. Indiana did this in the Big Ten. There are multiple, because we keep talking about, or maybe I say we, I don't want to project this onto you guys. I keep talking about how the bottom of the Big Ten with all this money flowing in.
No, I agree.
Is going to jump up.
Yeah.
So could that be Minnesota? Yeah. Could that be like, I think Wisconsin was too recently successful, so maybe they don't count.
I mean, I don't know if Washington's too recently successful. They played in the championship game.
Yeah, I think Washington was really good in the 90s. And so,
I think the problem, Andy, though, is that it, I feel like there's a top and a bottom to the SEC, and I think there's tiers in the Big Ten. And I think that bottom tier, like what we know about the finances at Rutgers, the perpetual inability to capitalize on talent at Maryland, Purdue, just period. Like it, the bottom feels so much further down that I think
it's,
you would
basically
have
Minnesota or Iowa, and Iowa is probably too good. But also, we know exactly what Kirk's going to do, and he's never going to do enough wildness offensively to get to where they want to be.
I could have entertained Michigan State in this conversation, but the problem is I don't love the hire until proven otherwise.
I could be wrong. I also think they were too good in the previous decade.
Yeah, they were pretty good. That's not a bad one, though.
Don't ask what happened next, but they went.
Yeah, didn't work out.
Yeah, so it's pretty much on you, PJ Fleck. I think we've narrowed it down.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
He's going to love hearing that.
So, in the Big Ten, Minnesota. And
I feel like PJ's been there long enough that we kind of know what they are.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, wild card. This is a dumb one. This is a dumb one, but you're asking. Andy wants to fill out the segment. I can feel it.
It's the middle of March. Nothing's dumb for football.
Here's some stupid, boys. Here's some stupid. Let me wind up real fast because I know better than to endorse this product.
Oh, boy.
University of California at Los Angeles.
I like Bob Chesney.
I like Bob Chesney, too. That's we all do because we all work in college football, which means that we look at UCLA and we see a lot of lip and very little service.
They just hired what you call an FFC, Godfrey.
Absolutely. A FFC factory member. Like, I mean, he came right off the conveyor belt. But
yes,
the problems at UCLA are, to me, systemic. They're historic. It's a lesser focused version sometimes of Heritage Hall at USC. And I don't think, no matter what we hear cyclically, that there's real passionate active money in that part of Los Angeles that's going to push to do what's necessary to win in college football. I don't believe it yet, but I love Bob.
Let me stay in state, but move to a different conference. I'm going to throw out one our producer TJ mentioned, and you know, this is a little bit of TJ, the Oregon grad with the former Oregon assistant who's now back at his alma mater. But
I think a little biased from West Coast slash Tosh.
He's also
biased.
Got a freaking quarterback, boys.
Yeah.
Let's talk Tosh Lapoy, Cal, Jaron Kiave Sangapolatele, which obviously he's not going to be there forever, but he's there now. And Cal's one of those that I think could get good pretty quick in the ACC. The problem is I just don't know that they would have the roster to go through the playoff and win the way Indiana did, though. I never would have said the same thing about Indiana.
Can I use the code word here? I am critical of their alignment. Do we all know what I mean by alignment?
Yeah, they don't care enough about football.
Yeah.
That's a generous way to say it. The politics in Berkeley are such that college football is not the priority, and I am tiptoeing right around that. I don't see alignment from a university leadership framework to push Cal Berkeley specifically into, like, we're talking about it would be a substantial investment, right? Like, aggressively.
I will say that they feel more aligned than they have felt since early in the Jeff Tedford era.
Because
like
of
Rivera? Like, when Tosh Lapoy was playing and becoming a grad assistant.
What if
Stanford cared about football again and lowered their academic standards?
Hey, Google guys. You want to toss in some cash?
Okay, it's weird that we got here. I think Stanford's... I'm not saying this in like a better's advice way, and I'm not saying this in like a standings way of like, watch out. I'm just saying I'm really, really, really interested to see how Andrew Luck and the money that does care about Stanford comports themselves over the next 2 or 3 years and tries to figure out, because I think Luck's the right move for them, okay, in a number of ways. And we all know how well connected he is. He's a really smart guy. I think he gets it. This is going to sound like I'm doing a bit here, but they could hack their way into relevance again. I really think they could. Yeah. It's not going to look like David Shaw.
Yeah.
It's just not going to look like those offense. It's going to be something we haven't seen yet. I just think that they're always, I think I just think they're a really interesting program to watch.
Well, the Andrew Luck versus Ron Rivera,
yeah,
in the Bay Area is an interesting GM matchup. And look, undeniably, Lapoy's brought more talent to Cal
so far
than
yes.
has been there. So that one is going to be fun to watch. I don't know if either of those two rise to the level of what we're talking about, because I'm not sure they can get as deep a roster as they're going to need. So that's,
I know,
that's
you know, and it's so crazy you say that, Andy, because it wasn't that long ago that I was standing on the field in Pasadena after Stanford mm-hmm. took a bag of hammers to Iowa and looked like yep. one of the best teams in the country. It's crazy. But you're
that's
right.
That's true. But I will say this. I was in South Bend, December of 2024, watching Indiana get beat by Notre Dame and thinking, well, that was a fun story.
Yeah.
Really?
Guess what?
Yeah.
We don't know anything.
Oh, no, we're real dumb.
We don't know anything.
Congrats to Oregon State in advance. But
I would love to see one of the schools on this list do this. Because what Indiana did made this sport more fun. It made everything more interesting.
Yes. Yeah. Made a lot of people.
And there's the prime example of, you know, how the footing or landscape of the, you know, power conference teams, especially in the power two, have sort of leveled off based on NIL and the portal, and mainly the portal there, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, hey.
Cignetti was able to do.
Does Arizona State count?
Yeah,
Sleeping Giant, part two.
That was one of the ones that came to my mind too early on.
Okay.
It was ASU. Yeah.
I
think that kind of counts.
Can they keep Kenny if Florida State
when Kenny Dillingham's asking Phil Mickelson to chip in? Like, I'm not sure they have the dollar figure alum that we're talking about here.
I feel like that could be the first totally crypto-backed program in the Power Four.
But they have a lot of alums.
Really?
Somebody's going to hit it big.
That's what I'm saying, baby. Yeah.
When we come back, watching the explanation of the college basketball tournament bracket versus the explanation of the football tournament bracket, two very different experiences. Should one look more like the other? We'll talk about it when we come back. College Football Inquirer, and every once in a while we cross over, especially during the week of the biggest event in college basketball. And I don't know, guys, I am Mr. College Football through and through. Love it. My favorite sport, always been my favorite sport. But my favorite week of the sports calendar, my favorite 2 days of the sports calendar are this Thursday and Friday.
Wow.
The NCAA Pretty Men's good. Basketball Tournament, the first round of the tournament, that is first weekend. So this whole weekend, you know, happy vasectomy day to those who celebrate tomorrow. The field was selected on Sunday. On Selection Sunday, as is tradition, the CBS broadcast brings on the chair of the selection committee. They ask him questions. He then does a teleconference for reporters where he explains what happens. These have not always gone particularly great. A lot of them have gone the way the football selection committee chair interviews tend to go on the Reese Davis segments on the weekly ranking reveals. And it's like, oh God, this is terrible. But I will say, the last 2 years, watching Sun Belt Commissioner Keith Gill do this, there's a way to do it, guys. Because Keith Gill, last year, when everybody's up in arms because North Carolina made the field, they weren't very good, and Bubba Cunningham, their AD, was on the committee. Keith Gill explained exactly why North Carolina made it and others didn't. And then this year, not a ton of controversy on the bubble, but Miami of Ohio at 31-1 gets sent to Dayton. The true seed list comes out, showing they're the last at-large team. Keith Gill explained it beautifully. He said, here's exactly what happened. We selected Miami of Ohio actually above Texas and NC State. But during our scrubbing process, which uses some advanced predictive metrics, they ended up getting pushed down to the 44th spot on the true seed line. And it was a lot of information that maybe he didn't have to tell everybody. But when he did tell everybody that, it's like, oh, so that's what happened. Okay, I get it.
You know, one of the things that hurts college football, we've talked about it endlessly here last fall,
yeah,
is that they do one of these six times.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And yeah. and it just really in the NCAA, and Keith Gill does not, right? He does it one time.
One time.
No, he does it twice.
Or he does it twice, I guess.
Yeah.
In a way, right? He does it. Yeah.
They do it about a month out.
Okay. Yeah, you do I a have no idea.
They don't give you a whole bracket, but they give you the 16.
I forgot. Yeah. Top 16?
Yeah. yeah. They don't give you a bracket of 68, right? They don't do the Mendoza line.
They give you the 16 true seeds, basically.
Okay. Which is the suggestion that the CFP should do, right? Is in many of people over the last several years have suggested the CFP change from the six shows, the five pre-shows, to two, one at the end, and maybe one in early to mid-November or something with a list. But ESPN has in its contract six shows, and I would anticipate next year, by the way, these six 11. Shows staying there.
This is hard for me. I'm going to be honest, guys. I'm kind of an emotional share here. I watched Keith Gill yesterday, I think, kill it, and I thought, why can't he do this for college football? Because Sun Belt's got football teams.
Yeah, but commissioners he did don't, a fantastic, don't serve in that role.
Yeah. Well, and then I thought, this was pointed out to me by a friend, that every criticism I have of the college football structure for this, I'm lauding and applauding the way the NCAA does it, because they are actually controlling this and delivering it to the TV partner, and the tail's not wagging the dog. Whereas Ross just correctly pointed out, ESPN sort of runs the college football playoff. And so while I can chastise ESPN, a signature move, I would also have to kind of tip my hat a little bit to the way that the NCAA handles this, because it was informative. It wasn't overkill. And also, Selection Sunday is designed for television. Please don't get me wrong. But I thought the Gill part of this, and the fact that they don't do it like they didn't start doing this 3 weeks ago, it's designed to be informative for the sort of sports journalism side of this and parsing the specifics. And when they brought poor Hunter Yurecek out there every week last year, it was like that was designed to be reality television by ESPN.
The difference between Keith Gill and Hunter Yurecek and all of the guys that have done the football one, and a lot of the guys that have done the basketball one who've not done it as well as Keith Gill does. Keith Gill just tells you what happened. He tells you what they talked about. He tells you why people like this team and why people didn't like this team. And he doesn't really sugarcoat it.
In the football, we get a lot of sort of like the media lingo, the cliche type of stuff.
They're having a strong season, but they're also having a strong season.
They're like really careful when they talk. Yeah. Usually, not sometimes though, but they're almost too careful to where they get themselves in trouble because they're trying to be so careful.
Did you see how many games Auburn lost? Of course, we're not putting them in the field.
How would you feel if, like, a heart surgeon walked out after working on your loved one and it was all cliche? It was all like, it was a big effort in there. I'm not going to lie. Like, you know, I thought our organization was strong and, you know, I feel like we could learn some things next time. No, you want to say they're dead or they're not. And that's all that they did yesterday.
They're alive.
Yes, that's it. That's all you want. I don't need a soft 5 minute opener from a heart surgeon.
Now,
right?
Here's what I need. So what I want is for ESPN to stop doing the stupid TV show, for the commissioners of the leagues to go, you know what? We are the product. We provide the thing that people want. ESPN is paying us money, and that's great. But you know what? We just might tell ESPN, hey, we would like to do this. And if you don't want to piss us off and you'd like us to sell this to you again the next time it's up for sale, maybe we'll tweak this a little. But that's not what's going to happen. Ross, you've talked to people.
Yeah.
I've talked to people. We know it's not changing. So I have a second unlikely potential option. Since they've changed the rules to make it like Sunbelt got a team in this year. Sunbelt got James Madison in this year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But they've changed the rules to make it where James Madison wouldn't get in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be really hard for Keith Gill's league to get in, even though I'll say this has turned into a very big Keith Gill glazing segment, but he deserves it.
Hey,
the
Sun
Belt has done a great job. Keith Gill has done a great job stewarding the Sun Belt, which was the weakest FBS league 15 years ago and is now probably, depending on how you feel about the new Mountain West and the new Pac-12, I think it might be the second strongest non-power league.
Oh, you can argue it for sure.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So,
yeah,
and they're like all geographic sensible.
It makes sense. Yes. So Keith Gill,
culturally and geographically,
clearly a good leader and a good communicator. Here's what I would like them to do. Keith Gill doesn't have to be on the committee. He doesn't have to be the chair of the committee.
He just comes out.
I want him invited to Grapevine, Texas, to sit in the room, eat off the buffet, Gill, and watch the conversation, and then tell us what the hell happened.
Tell us what happened. Ooh. Yeah.
Like an ombudsman? You want an ombudsman?
I do. I'll do it. And I think he'd be the perfect one. Even the look, when a Sunbelt question comes up, he can just tag out. Like if, let's say Coastal Carolina is up for a spot, he can tag out and throw some poor AD who looks like deer in the headlights up there to talk to Reese Davis.
All right.
I'm fixated on this ombudsman idea. Let's find a third party who just be like, guys, you won't believe how jacked up this is. Just like someone to come out every week, like, yeah, boy.
I mean, it has to be someone professional enough to like. If you name names,
me,
like, you're not gonna believe what Hunter Yurecek was saying. If you do that, they're gonna kick you out. They're never gonna let you back in.
I didn't say I'd last long. I just said I wanted to do it.
No. But this is why Keith Gill or someone equally adept at communicating, but who also understands this world, who can come in and say, listen, this Notre Dame-Miami thing, there's a significant argument happening about whether head-to-head truly matters. And then we've got a bunch of other people saying Notre Dame is just so much better and Miami lost these two games in the middle of conference play. And that's the divide right now. Because what did the having the stupid TV show do? The stupid TV show is the reason people were surprised when Miami got in over Notre Dame.
Right?
Yeah.
If you never have the stupid TV show, where the first episode of the stupid TV show, Notre Dame is ranked 8 spots ahead of Miami, despite having the same record and a head-to-head loss to Miami. Mm-hmm. If you don't have that stupid TV show, and it's just at the end, they say Miami's 1 spot ahead of Notre Dame, nobody's surprised by that.
Right. Okay, so maybe it's less adoration of what happened yesterday and the individuals on air as it is just this format that basketball has is far superior and provides for
it
less
is, but I also
exposure.
I also think there are people who are better at communicating this than others. And when you find one, hold him tight and don't let him go. So Keith Gill, I know you're busy. I know you're running a conference, but I'm going to need you to block out your weekends in November.
Well, when we've seen that through the years of the CFP chair, right? I think most time the chair is 2 years. I think a few times it's been 3, maybe. But it's a good rotation that we've seen, and some are just better than others. But there's a lot of conversation this spring about the shows, about the number of shows, how to change the shows, and how to change the speaker, potentially, even if you do 6. Does the chair have to talk every time? We'll find out a little more next month at the CFP's annual spring meetings if they're gonna really change anything. I don't expect, you know, any of the shows to go away. Maybe the shows change a little bit.
Well, Ross, what
there was more
what change other than removing the speaker could there actually be if there's still gonna be a show?
Yeah, I mean, either removing the speaker or like different speaker. I mean, what if it was Rich Clark?
Well, okay, I was going to ask. Rich Clark's the executive director.
Right.
He was a lieutenant general in the Air Force. The man's not afraid of somebody saying, well, I don't like what you said about Texas.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But
so that's been, yeah, so that's sort of that's been not talked the about problem. As, you know.
Yeah. I think as long as there's a show, ESPN is going to mandate there be a faux bracket or a bracket of the week, right? Like let's not kid ourselves. That's why
you don't really need the other bells and whistles. Like you do not have to put an athletic director who's not great on camera on camera. Right. Nobody's forcing you to do that.
So now we're getting into conclave status where they're just gonna puff out a bracket every week with zero context or explanation.
Would it matter? The context they gave us for Notre Dame being 8 spots ahead of Miami.
Yeah, just make you more confused.
I'm not disagreeing. The whole system sucks, and it's designed for ESPN to have a reality show, but like, and it comes at the expense of the sport, as do most things in this situation. But I know they're not going to get rid of it, to Ross's point. So, I mean, like, I kind of just feel like we're stuck with it.
I have 5 shows, no speaker, just rankings, and then, I don't know, have a speaker the last time.
Yeah, I don't really care if it's Greg McElroy and if you need Joey the Galloway shows, arguing. That doesn't really affect my happiness one way or the other. I don't care.
Bristol would not probably give us this info if I asked, but I wonder what the minute by minute was. Like, were people hanging on when they would kick? They would do the bracket reveal. They would do the top 25. Then they would do the bracket. Then they would then kick it over, and Reese Davis would talk to, you know, whoever's in charge, Hunter or whomever. I wonder
Matt
in
Rhodes
the minute
at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, well, things happen. I wonder if were the ratings strong for that segment? Like.
That's a good question.
This is the kind of stuff Bristol's not going to tell us. But
yeah, does it also prop up your basketball game that you got next, or does it help? Yeah. I'm curious to know the answer.
Sir, that's a Northern Illinois, where it was a Northern Illinois football game. All right.
No, those are usually on ESPN 2. By that second week, you're sandwiched between two.
They've wrapped it around the
power on power basketball games. Like, Tom Izzo calling timeouts has seriously affected my life.
Oh, yeah.
The past
slowed
years.
Down the ranking show by like an hour. Yeah. I remember one time they went to like double overtime. The ranking show started like at 9:45.
But you didn't love basketball then, did you, traitor?
Yeah.
Listen, I the constant fouling in all the reviews, I can't take. I'm not
Look, man,
not down for that.
Sport is way too organized
this weekend,
for us to fall in love with it.
Yeah.
This week, Andy. That's right. And could we have, you know, somebody tweeted, I think it was Kevin from SI, tweeted out what this week would look like with the expanded
76-team. Yeah.
With the, instead of you have the first four, you'd have the first 12, which they wouldn't call it the first 12. They would call it the, quote, opening round. but it would be 12
games.
That's
what games. They
call the first four. Yeah. Pitting a lot of 15 and 16 seeds in a lot of 11 seeds and 12 seeds and 13 seeds, I believe, too, against one another. And most people, I think, do not want that when they saw that.
Most people retched violently when they saw that.
Yeah. Yeah. The responses to that are pretty clear. It's kind of like the responses that we saw to, honestly, to the Big Ten 2014 playoff. Like, did the general public, 80%, doesn't seem to want expansion of the NCAA tournament or too much of an expansion of the college football.
Yeah, the 72 team tournament, the way that looked is barf. And again, if you're going to have play-ins, stop penalizing the teams that earn their way in by winning their conference tournament. This is my basketball rant. Play-ins should be mediocre power conference teams that we've heard of. And that's the only way they should be able to get into the tournament.
Yeah, totally agree.
And it'll be
you.
half, right? Like, it'll be half and...
I don't want half and half. I want all of those.
But
I just
that's
want
what
all
it is right
mediocre
now, right?
Power
the first four, it's what 50, it is right 50. Now. And then if you had 12, it would be 12 games of...
Yeah, six
of
and six.
At-large teams, and it'll be 12 games of AQ automatic qualifier.
Right
I guess,
now, it's 50.
I think.
It's 50-50 right now,
right?
Because the play-in games are Texas, North Carolina State, Miami, Ohio,
it would be the same.
And then a bunch of 16 seeds.
UMBC should be in the in the real tournament. And
by the way,
define the real tournament as when you get to 64.
This podcast officially endorses UMBC, if only for their social media accounts. We are Chesapeake's. They're Chesapeake Retrievers. You have to say the whole thing or they'll yell at you. I'm telling you. You don't want to run afoul of that
Twitter
account.
I don't want to get on the bad side of their
Twitter account. I'm telling you. They will whoop your ass. I love UMBC. Official basketball team of our podcast. I just decided. Please send us gear.
Nice.
So I God forbid.
Why not?
The idea they're talking about, right now you said, right, it's two games pitting bubble teams,
right,
at large bubble teams, and two games pitting AQ, lower level, like conference AQ. It would be four more at large bubble team games and four more AQ game. So 6-6. That's the
please don't
idea they're floating, and they would be two played Tuesday in Wednesday, and they would create, I think, a second location probably in the western part of the country.
Boise.
Dayton, and then you'd have some other, you know, Portland or
Spokane.
Whatever. Phoenix or Spokane or whatever.
Please don't.
Really is please one of America's perfect sporting events, and they just are hellbound and determined to mess with it. It's unbelievable.
Don't do it. All right. When we come back, Ross had a very interesting story on Thursday. We touched on it briefly on Thursday's show. I would like to touch on it again because I think I know what Greg Sankey's doing here, but I want to make sure because I'm not sure his threat, if he goes through with it, is going to go the way he wants. We'll talk about it when we come back. We're back at the College Football Inquirer, and Ross Dellinger had a very interesting story last Thursday about the SEC and the potential not to go it alone, not to break away from the NCAA, because Greg Sankey's been very clear that that's not something they want to do or that he wants to do. But Ross, am I getting this correct? That they might potentially, if the rulemaking apparatus doesn't work fast enough to modernize the rules, that the SEC might decide to have its own rules and possibly its own enforcement of said rules.
Yeah, the SEC presidents met in Nashville Wednesday, Thursday, and this was supposed to be a topic of conversation. I believe it was. There's I guess two paths here. One is taking your rules and enforcement that's now at the national level with the NCAA in the College Sports Commission and taking it into Birmingham in the SEC office, handling rulemaking, enforcement, governance of your own league. And there's another path of doing that, but plus only playing yourself, only competing against, you know, another SEC school. And, you know, I wrote a long story about this in January. And then, as Andy mentioned, on Thursday, had another story about kind of setting the scene for the president's meeting where this was going to be discussed. And nothing was decided there. And I don't think anything will be until the summer, if not even later, maybe even into the fall on this issue. But if you go down the first path of having your own rules and governance and you're creating your own rules and you're enforcing them to a pretty strict level when other conferences aren't enforcing those rules as strict, then you're going to end up going down the second path, which is just playing yourself and not playing other schools from other conferences. And Andy, I'm glad you qualified the Greg Sankey doesn't want to, or Greg Sankey has said the SEC doesn't want to do that. Well, at least Greg Sankey doesn't want to do that. Because I think there are probably plenty of people in the SEC, and there have been for years, as you know, Andy, and Godfrey probably too, that want to do that, right? That want to go, not just make their own rules and governance, but that want to just compete against only themselves. And it does feel like we're like closer to ever to that happening. That's at least a more serious conversation than what we've seen in the past. And when people ask, like, well, what rules are you talking about? All the rules that are sort of at issue right now nationally that are either not being enforced or enforcement is difficult because of the antitrust rules. So eligibility, the length of player can play in college, all the cap compensation, athlete compensation rules and enforcement around that. Transferring, the transfer rule. Tampering, the tampering rule. All these rules, conceivably the SEC would create its own rules and enforce them within its membership. And at least they want to be enforced strictly. So we'll see if it all comes to pass.
Godfrey, you help me out here. You went to Ole Miss. What's the first thing that's going to happen if the SEC decides to take over enforcement of the SEC and they punish Ole Miss for something?
Nothing. Or actually,
something's going to happen. Ole Miss is going to sue them.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, nothing. Nothing's going to actually happen, though. Yeah, they're just going to do the same thing. They're never going to be able to enforce themselves. That's not how enforcement works.
No, why would anybody volunteer to be the cops? The cops just get yelled at.
This is hands down never going to happen. And this is just dumb posturing. But I got to be honest with you. A lot of times, like, I give Sankey a lot of grief, but a lot of times you can see him signaling an intent of his large corporation, if you will, to say, hey, this is the direction the money is going. This one is like, I understand the intent he's signaling, but he probably should say less, as the kids are wont to say, like, because you can't really walk it out past this nonsense proposal.
I think he wants people to game this out so that the people who are yelling at him that want to do this understand it. Because
that is more of the point probably here. Keep in mind, because my January story about the rules and enforcement coming in-house was mainly his bosses talking on the record about it. Right, his presidents and his athletic directors.
Let me help Greg Sankey out here and to the presidents of whichever universities we're talking about. Mm-hmm. It's the dumbest idea I've ever heard. Yes. It's incredibly stupid.
It's you don't want to go down this path.
If you do this, it will get the SEC broken up. That's the logical conclusion to that. Because these are people who rebel when the NCAA does this. Well, guess what? If you're the one doing it now, they're going to rebel against you.
It would never even get that far. But, I don't know. Sure. Yeah. Like, I definitely understand what he's trying to do here, but I would say less with this one, right? Like, I really would. No one is ever going to police themselves at a conference level for rules enforcement when it comes to, like, personnel.
Well, no one's going to make more strict rules than another conference. Like, I remember Larry Lacewell, the former Barry Switzer assistant, explaining to me how Oklahoma used to use the Southwest Conference's signing day to just cherry pick the best players from, like, TCU and SMU, because Oklahoma was in the Big Eight and they had a later signing day. So the Southwest Conference would have its signing day and they'd be like, oh, who'd SMU sign? Who'd TCU sign? Who'd Texas Tech sign? And they just go in and take them. Like,
so the Godfrey, you mentioned a point I want to make.
Yeah.
You're going to laugh about this one. Right. But, and Andy, you asked Godfrey about what would Ole Miss do, right? Yeah, if they're punished and all that, and that they would sue the league. The idea around all of this, the idea, is that if you're going to do that, you don't compete in the SEC any longer.
They're going to run out of teams.
It's the same idea as a participation agreement, right? It's the same idea as the CSC participation agreement. You either sign or you don't compete.
Have we not seen these people in action for the last 100 years? Like, you're going to run out of teams.
The SEC all signed the participation agreement in June. Now I don't know that they all will sign. I don't know.
I mean, they didn't. They weren't happy about it. I know a few. They weren't happy.
They weren't happy. A few of them weren't happy they had to sign, but they did all sign under threat. Remember, of this is a coalition of the willing. Is how somebody else put it to me.
I think they'd find out that there aren't that many willing when the rubber met the road.
Yeah.
So now, could this be? I think you've hit on it, Ross. What this actually is? Could it also be a signal to the other power leagues, specifically the one in that's based in the Chicagoland area,
Chicago,
to maybe cooperate a little more than they have with one another to try to create some rules that might work for everybody who's of a certain income bracket?
Well, yeah, that's a good point, Andy. And look at what's going on with the tampering, and we can weave that into this conversation.
Yes.
Which this is a really fascinating situation playing out with the tampering rule. Obviously, the NCAA, was instructed in January by the Division I boards to start ramping up tampering investigations. They have done that. It has put many SEC and Big Ten schools squarely in the crosshairs of some of these investigations, because the NCAA went to Ole Miss after the Dabo Swinney comments, and Ole Miss said, well, here's like 20 other schools that
there's everybody
with
trying
our players
to steal players from our roster, including our former coach.
Yeah, I mean, everybody is doing it to a degree. Well, that means like all these other investigations in these cases are being opened. And then we saw the Big Ten send a letter. We talked about it on the last pod. Sent a letter to the NCAA saying we think you should stop all these tampering investigations. And nobody else signed on to the letter. And I think we had already taped the pod when my story dropped about the Big 12 and ACC coming out with statements to me saying, we don't believe that the tampering investigation should be stopped. And then I saw Greg Sankey said the same thing basically over
I can't wait until there are no coaches coaching because they're all suspended.
Because they're
except
all suspended.
Dabo Sweeney and the three Service Academy coaches. Yeah.
you think when the Big Ten came out and did that public suggestion to do away with tampering, like if Sankey is worth his money, that's an immediate you up text. Like, oh, you up? Like, because to go back to the beginning of this segment, you can't push any actual reform or separation from the NCAA or the CSC or whoever it is without the Big Ten coming with you. These two factions have to work together. So you would assume, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, Ross, that the Big Ten even adopting that position publicly would work in the favor of what the SEC is quietly proposing, or at least in their subtext.
Yes. Yeah. And it was discussed. I think, I don't know specifically if the Big Ten's letter was discussed, but like the tampering situation was definitely discussed this past week in Nashville among the SEC presidents. And I don't think any of them, as Greg Sankey, I think, said to Chris Lowe over the weekend, they don't want to stop tampering. So the Big Ten, again, is sort of in this corner by itself with one of these things.
You mean they don't want to stop the investigation of tampering, but it was a nice Freudian slip because they really actually don't want to stop tampering.
Yeah,
well,
that's true. They don't. Yeah. Yes. But I guess the point of the SEC, Big 12, and ACC, who are in support of the continuation of the tampering investigations, their point they're making
is they want to see which offensive coordinators are qualified to become head coaches because they're going to be interim coaches.
But somebody is going to have to get like, and it's kind of like the similar thing you hear about with the College Sports Commission.
Okay.
Somebody has to get penalized for like the landscape to change. That's the idea. We need to slap somebody's
wrist.
This
is what I said when Dabo went after Pete Golding. Because, listen, I think Dabo has come around on some ideas. His AD Graham Neff, one of the brightest young minds in the business, I think that was their way of forcing the NCAA into a corner. And either the NCAA says, we are powerless to fight this, and then they can say, okay, well, what can we do that would change things? Or they'll actually try to enforce it. I think it will be hilarious if they actually try to enforce this. It will be hilarious, and multiple schools will sue the NCAA, and it will be funny, and I will laugh my ass off.
That's my chess match. I think that's what I'm endorsing, actually, is I think they're actually... This is some kind of Game of Thrones.
As you said, Godfrey, last time, have you seen the end of Reservoir Dogs? Like, that is what this is.
And I kind of think that best favors Petiti and Sankey. If you were to force the kangaroo courts of this banana republic to actually enforce their laws on the books, then the side with all the power, which are the cartels in this instance, would then immediately, you would end up with total pandemonium, which the SEC and the Big Ten could use as a means to push through a completely new organized governing body that they control.
You've essentially made Greg Sankey and Tony Petiti CIA agents in Panama. That's what they are.
I mean, either that or cartel heads. I mean,
well,
they are cartels.
I think they work together, but yeah.
They are cartels. So, yeah. Well, I mean, cartels work together. That's one of the reasons why that guy,
when it suits them,
just got killed in Mexico.
That's true.
When it suits them.
I mean, look, the Mexican drug cartels are better organized than the college football playoff. I'm just like, that's not a joke.
Yeah.
I read a lot about Mexico. Trust me.
Yeah,
like, they figured out synergy.
I watched Sicario the other day. I'm with you.
Wah. Sorry, I didn't see that music. Okay.
Gentlemen,
get us out of here, Andy.
This has been fun. This, I'm sure, topic will come back up again, because if those investigations do continue, as those power conferences want them to do, then we'll we'll be able to talk about it more. So we'll talk to you again on Thursday.